Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsom, and I'm here to break down UFC Vegas 72 from the Apex again for the second week running, this time with a brand new headline event after Armin Sarukian and Renato Moicano fell through. This time we have the co-main event that should have been from last weekend at UFC Vegas 71. We've got Song Yadong versus Ricky Simon, which is a phenomenal main event, a great upgrade, and the extra two rounds absolutely do this fight justice as well. So really looking forward to the main event, even though I already broke it down last week before the fight got scrapped and put onto this card, so I'll get through it again. But just before we get into those breakdowns, as always, there's going to be a Baze AI recap from last weekend's UFC Vegas 71 event. That's going to be on our YouTube channel, under the Baze AI specific playlist on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/MMAPlay365. So if you are interested in the algorithms, the UFC prediction software, the dogs that it keeps hitting as well, then make sure you check that recap out. But with that aside, let's get straight into the breakdowns. And we start with that brand new, shiny, amazing main event that we've got between Song Yadong and Ricky Simon. Like I already mentioned in the introduction, if you missed it, that this fight was last week's co-main event, but it got moved after Sarukian and Moicano fell through as a main event. The UFC was struggling, and honestly, I prefer this main event to the Sarukian Moicano main event. Not that that wasn't a great fight, because it was, but I just think that sometimes things need to happen to do a fight more justice, and I think the extra two rounds in this fight absolutely does that. Now, I slightly favour Simone in regards to those extra two rounds, but not by a great deal. I also think Song works well over five rounds as well, and again, there's intangibles here that might even make this slightly favourable to Simone over those extra two rounds. It's just things have got to go a certain way, and I'll explain what I mean shortly. I have already broken this fight down, which I did on the last podcast, so if there is anything that, you know, I have missed from here, you can also go back to that last week's podcast and listen to that breakdown as well. There's not going to be too much difference in regards to the breakdown and the prediction and ultimately the pick as well. But I'll just quickly explain what I mean by those intangibles, that if something specific was to happen to Simone, then the extra two rounds might be a benefit of Song Yadong. And there's a couple of things there. So the first one, if Ricky Simone does tire, because his pace is so relentless, it's so quick, it's so fast, you know, he'll be in the face of his opponent at all times, coming forwards at all times, you know, shooting plenty of takedowns. And if Simone does get tired later in the fight, maybe halfway through round four and into round five, then that might be where Song Yadong's reserve some energy and can potentially look better in those later two rounds. However, I do think that that is, you know, I think you're stretching in regards to thinking that Simone's going to tire in that way. And you can never say never, of course, but Simone's gas tank and cardio is some of the best in the UFC. It's up there with the likes of a Merab Dewalishvili, for example. So I don't think that even over those extra two rounds, Simone's going to tire. I think if anything, he would probably, the pace, pressure and relentless wrestling would probably tire Song a little bit more, and therefore give Ricky Simon an advantage in those later two rounds, those extra two rounds that they've got now. The other thing to consider, though, as well, is if Song does start getting off on some good strikes, good combinations, stuffs a few early takedowns and starts piecing Ricky Simon up on the feet a little bit in regards to the striking, the crisp and clean combinations, then maybe that might tire Simon out. And I think that there's a greater probability of that happening and tiring Simon out that way than Simon tiring out being the fighter on top or having the game plan and the fight and everything going his way for the entire fight. So there's a couple of intangibles there, but ultimately I don't think that there's a massive advantage for Ricky Simon over the extra two rounds. And, you know, even if Song happens to be that fighter that's got the advantage over those extra two rounds from what we see play out in the cage, I still don't think it's going to be huge anyway. I just think that they've got an extra two rounds of two fighters that do seemingly have okay cardio, that do seemingly, you know, fight well over a long period of time and can pace themselves. Well, not Ricky Simon, but he doesn't have to pace himself because of his cardio and gas tank, but you get what I'm saying. But now going into here stylistically, so like I said in the last breakdown on the last week's podcast, you know, I do feel that stylistically this is a fight that favours Ricky Simon, just because not just of his wrestling, his pace and pressure, but the fact that Song Yadong historically has struggled with these types of fighters before. So Song Yadong was taken down 5 times by Cody Stamann. He was also taken down twice by Marlon Vera. He was taken down 3 times by Kyla Phillips, once by Casey Kenny. He was even taken down by Corey Sandhagen. And then in the takedowns that Corey Sandhagen didn't land against Song Yadong, Song Yadong was stuck against the cage for, you know, quite a few minutes of certain rounds, and Corey Sandhagen was just, again, looking for that takedown, but was able to keep him in place and control and stop Song Yadong, close that distance. You know, Song Yadong's the best fighter in boxing range, so just being able to close the distance and keep Song Yadong out of where he's most dangerous. Again, historically, with the fights that I've just mentioned, those are the fights that Song Yadong really struggles in. That Kyla Phillips fight was one that stands out. I actually bet Kyla Phillips as a plus money underdog in that fight. And although the last round was a little bit sketchy with the cardio of Phillips, you know, that same cardio issue isn't going to be happening with Ricky Simon. And Kyla Phillips did some really good work. The one thing I will say, though, is I do think Phillips is a better topside grappler than what Ricky Simon is. With Ricky Simon, he'll rinse and repeat takedowns. His opponent will likely keep getting back up, but he'll just keep rinsing and repeating. It's just with Song Yadong, eventually, Song Yadong does have a good get-up game and he does have good defensive jiu-jitsu, but eventually he can be got at once a fighter hit so many takedowns on him, and you can see him start to be a little beaten from a morale perspective. He breaks a little bit inside the cage from that mental perspective. Not that he's got any sort of quit in him, but once the takedowns start becoming 2, 3, and 4, you can see him start to struggle to get back up even more each takedown that lands on him. And I think that's going to play a factor in this fight as well. And then you look at the other side with Ricky Simon and this relentless wrestling that I'm talking about. We'll go through every single fight under the UFC banner, starting with a contender series. Ricky Simon scores 14 takedowns against Donovan Freelo. Then against Merab Dewalishvili, he was taken down 6 times, but he landed 2 takedowns on Merab. And he actually beat Merab as well. He landed 7 takedowns against Montel Jackson, 4 takedowns against Rana Yahya. Obviously, he was beaten relatively early on with Uriah Faber, so didn't manage to get any away there. But then he scored 6 takedowns against Rob Font, 7 against Ray Borg, 7 against Gaetano Pereo, 6 against Brian Kelleher, 2 against Rafael Assensau, and then he scored 2 takedowns against Jack Shaw, plus the submission on Jack Shaw as well, which is a super impressive win. So again, stylistically, I just feel that, look, I do think it favours Ricky Simon. However, if Song, in the intermediate times between the striking and the wrestling, if he can start landing some good combinations on Ricky Simon, I actually think Song is by far the better striker in this fight. More cleaner, crisp, like I said, combinations, power as well. We've also seen Ricky Simon be a little bit hittable in some fights. We've seen him rocked, wobbled, we've seen him knocked out. So, you know, it's not as if Song Yadong doesn't have a path to victory here. He absolutely does. He's just got to make sure he gets his game going in, like I said, the middle of those striking and then wrestling exchanges, because Ricky Simon is always going to strike to look to get into his takedowns, get an entry into a shot and look to take his opponents down. So Song's got to do good work in those small moments, those small pockets of opportunities between when Ricky Simon is about to shoot a takedown and, you know, whilst they're stood up on the feet. So Song's got to get that going there, but I just feel like it's going to be a little bit too much to ask, especially over 5 rounds. I think Song's best path to victory here is to knock Ricky Simon out early, because if this does go into late into round 2 and into round 3, I think that Song will slow more than Ricky Simon. I don't think he's got a cardio issue, but he will slow a little bit more than Simon. But also, once he's slowing, his power will start to be depleting a little bit more and more each round. And I think the longer this fight goes on, the more it favours Ricky Simon. So for those reasons, I'm picking Ricky Simon to win this fight. And in the next fight, in the co-main event, we've got a fun one here between Caio Barbalho versus Michal Oleksychuk. And it's a really good fight stylistically, because you've got a fighter with an absolute path to victory with the grappling with Caio Barbalho, and you've got a fighter here with an absolute path to victory of the striking. Both fighters can do it all. Both fighters are very good all-round type of fighters. But specifically here, if this fight's a 15-minute kickboxing fight, Mihalo Luksajczyk's going to light Kyle Bahio up. But it's not, it's mixed martial arts. And if there is wrestling and grappling, then Kyle Bahio is going to likely not only roll all over Oleksajczyk on the mat, but he's probably going to get him out of there as well with ground and pound or a submission. Now, normally with these types of fights, the underdog's really interesting, especially when we've got a heavy underdog on one side, because Mihal Oleksajczyk absolutely has a defined path to victory. So, you know, at the time of recording, this is around plus 250. So he's a big dog. And it really was interesting to me before I went into tape. However, coming out of tape, I do understand it. You know, Kyle Bahio, he's a beast on the mat. He really, really is so good when he starts getting into his grappling exchanges, his positional awareness and ability to control most positions as well, and also find a solid position on the back or start looking to get around to the back. Like I said, positionally, he's one of the best in the division, in my opinion. So although Oleksajczyk does have this real defined path to victory, he also has massive holes within his defensive wrestling and his defensive grappling. He can be taken down. Once he's taken down, his get-up game has shown to be okay. But the problem with that get-up game is it's dependent on showing his back to his opponent, and then he can start working back up to his feet. The issue here is if you show your back to Kyle Bahio, he's going to take it. So this is where I think it's now starting to be a very difficult fight for Oleksajczyk, because, like I say, he's got a defined path to victory, but he's got big holes in that defensive wrestling and grappling against somebody like Kyle Bahio. Whereas I think Kyle Bahio, although he's not going to be the better striker in this fight, I still think he's going to be competitive striking, whereas I don't think Oleksajczyk's going to be that competitive with the wrestling and grappling. Now, the thing is with Bahio, he's just got to be patient in this fight. He's got to mind his P's and Q's. He can't start trying to rush into range with his arms out, looking to reach out for a leg and enter into a bad takedown or anything like that, because Oleksajczyk packs power. He packs power in combination. So Bahio has got to, you know, keep his wits about him, like I said, mind his P's and Q's. But once he does that, if he's patient, I think he'll be able to get into that range where he can get a hold of Oleksajczyk and he can take him down, or maybe he draws Oleksajczyk to throw a big combination at him and ducks under the combination. There's ways that Bahio will be able to take Oleksajczyk down in this fight. And unfortunately, look, I love Oleksajczyk. He's one of my favourite fighters to watch. He comes in there, he stands, he bangs, he'll be aggressive, he'll exchange, he'll eat a punch to give a punch. But unfortunately in this fight, I do think that he's a big stylistic disadvantage because of where his weaknesses are the absolute strengths of his opponent. So for those reasons, I'm picking Kyle Bahio to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Cody Brundage versus Rodolfo Vieira. Interesting fight. And of course, Vieira is a relatively sized favourite in the fight. Now, there is a path here for Brundage, and there's a path here for most fighters. You've just got to make Rodolfo Vieira work. And it is more difficult. It is easier said than done, is what I'm trying to say. I think Brundage, look, Brundage is best when he's wrestling. He's best when he's getting on top of his opponent. And it normally comes when his opponent is a better striker than him. And look, Brundage can strike. You know, he's not in the UFC just because of his wrestling and grappling. He can strike as well, but I just don't think he has a massively significant advantage striking over Rodolfo Vieira. I don't think Rodolfo Vieira's, you know, this elite striker either. I just feel that from a striking perspective, looking at both fighters, they're both relatively similar in regards to that skill set and ability striking. And if it was a 15-minute kickboxing fight, it would just be a very close fight. However, it's not going to be a 15-minute kickboxing fight. And I feel that where Brundage is strong, where his strengths are, the strengths are absolutely there with Rodolfo Vieira as well. But the strengths on Vieira are just so much more defined, so much more exaggerated than the strengths of Brundage. I think Vieira, he's going to be able to get into these positions where he's clinched up with Cody Brundage. I think he is going to have opportunities to take him down. I think once he is down, I think Brundage is going to absolutely struggle underneath Vieira. I think Vieira is going to cut through him like a knife through butter, like he should do with most fighters. However, the anomaly fight, obviously the Hernandez fight, Hernandez did survive, tired Vieira out just purely for defending and Vieira overworking, and then he was able to get Vieira out later in that fight. I don't think Brundage is going to have that same success in this fight. I think it's a lot to ask. Like I said, I think the striking's close, but I think with the way that both fighters like to fight, and they can close the distance really well, and they'll both probably naturally try and close the distance anyway on each other. So I think the fight's going to be fought in close quarters on the feet. I don't think there's going to be too much movement and bouncing around the cage. And because of that, I think Vieira is going to have those clinch positions where he is likely going to be stronger. He is likely going to dominate those clinch positions. And because of that, get the takedowns. And once the takedowns happen, I do think he's going to get Brundage out of there. Whether that be a submission or ground and pound, I'm not sure. More likely, obviously, to be a submission. But in this fight, I'm picking Rodolfo Vieira to win the fight. And in the next fight, this is a fun one, one that you can mark down as a potential fight of the night for sure. We've got Julian Arosa versus the newcomer Fernando Padilla. I do think that there's a chance that we see a mixed martial arts fight here. We do see a little bit of wrestling and a little bit of grappling, but that is more likely to be from Julian Arosa's side. And is Julian Arosa going to wrestle too much against anybody? It's unlikely. I just feel that if any fighter out of these two fighters here is going to mix it up, it's more likely to be Julian Arosa. But I think this fight's going to be won and lost on the feet. I think it's going to be an absolute banger of a fight. And the reason I say that is, look, I think Fernando Padilla's got really good volume. He starts really fast as well. And this is where the fight's going to be interesting, because if the fight does play out a little bit longer, I think Julian Arosa, although he tires as well, and he's got that junkyard dog type of fight in him, and I just feel that his cardio will carry him late into the fight, whereas I think Padilla's, if he starts fast, his cardio will deplete late into the fight. So I think you've got a fight here where Padilla's going to be better early, Arosa's likely going to be better later should the fight go late. But like I said, I think it's going to be an interesting striking fight. Both fighters, nice and tall, nice and big for the division. Padilla's very boxing heavy. He will land straight punches. He'll put the pressure on his opponent. He's got volume, especially early on, and he'll touch his opponents. He'll touch, accumulate volume and start to break their opponent down that way. And I think he can break Julian Arosa early in this fight. Like I say, the question marks come if he starts hurting Arosa, puts the pedal to the metal even more, really goes hard, tries to get Arosa out of there, who we all know is very difficult to get out of there, especially in these scrappy, you know, ugly, dirty, gritty, grindy type of fights. And if Padilla doesn't get there, I think he's going to tire himself out and Arosa will take over later. So there's definitely a concern on Padilla's side. It's just in this type of fight, I'm not sure. Well, not in this type of fight, because it's this type of fight that Arosa's going to love. It's just I'm not always confident and trustworthy of Julian Arosa winning a fight in the UFC, but this is a winnable fight for him if it goes late. And I know I've said that numerous times now, but I just think in the early moments in this fight, I think Padilla's going to have volume. I think he's going to be able to land on Arosa. I think Arosa will try and come forwards on this kid, and when he comes forwards, just get lit up a little bit early on. And I do think that although it's going to be a tough ask, I do think Padilla might be able to get him out of there early, or at least just do really good work in that first round, have a good first half of the second round, and then when Arosa takes over, he'll be playing catch up and maybe won't be able to catch up enough to get himself a win on the scorecards. But I do think Arosa will be better later. It's just I think the work that Padilla does earlier in the fight will be more significant, and I think he's got a good chance of finishing in early in that fight as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Fernando Padilla to win this fight. And in the next fight, we're in the heavyweight division, and this is an interesting fight. We've got Waldo Cortez Acosta versus Marcos Rogério de Lima. And man, this is a big step up in competition for Cortez Acosta. The UFC, clearly they want to find out. They want to find out how legit this kid is. Obviously, he's beaten two opponents that aren't anywhere close to the level of de Lima experience and skill-wise, but man, Cortez Acosta's got some good traits. You know, he's got good volume, he's got good accuracy, he's got good speed and movement around the cage as well. He doesn't look to be one of these, you know, bloated up heavyweights. Like, he can move really well. The thing is, Marcos Rogério de Lima, he also moves really well. Remember, he's an ex-light heavyweight, so these fighters are going to weigh roughly around the same. So that speed advantage Cortez Acosta has over some of the bigger heavyweights, I don't think he's going to be as defined against de Lima, although I do think Cortez Acosta will be slightly faster. However, with saying that, though, I do think that stylistically, this is a fight that De Lima's going to absolutely love, because De Lima's the type of fighter that doesn't like a fighter that's going to try and wrestle him and take him down. And Cortez Acosta hasn't shown any side really of his game in that respect in regards to the wrestling and grappling. In fact, if you are looking at the wrestling and grappling, you'd give the edge to De Lima there as well. I think he's the more likely wrestler, or the more likely fighter to wrestle. And I think he's, if he does want to wrestle, he can get Cortez Acosta down as long as he's doing it at the right ranges. And we have seen him lay on top of his opponents for three rounds, landing soft ground and pound, doing just enough for a referee not to split them up and stand them back up to the feet. So from a wrestling grappling perspective, I think it's there for De Lima if he wants it. But on the feet, I think De Lima's got advantages here as well. You know, the huge power that comes out of this dude, he'll literally just stand in the pocket and exchange big winging punches, which at heavyweight is always a risk. But it seems that De Lima has some sort of durability and then the power advantage over almost everybody he fights against. And once a punch lands, it doesn't even need to be clean. He's one of those types of heavyweights where even a glancing punch across the top of the head's going to be enough to rock, wobble, or knock his opponent down or even out. So the power that De Lima possesses is crazy. But the other issue I've got here for Cortez Acosta is, even if Cortez Acosta wants to stay at range, fight on the outside, try and dictate the pace of the fight, come in and out on, you know, his terms, his leg's there to be kicked. And again, De Lima's got a brutal low kick, and Acosta just doesn't seem to check leg kicks. And I think even if he checks a couple in this fight, even if he's learnt from his last couple of fights, I just don't think it's going to be that ingrained into his game that he's going to be able to do it consistently. So I think that De Lima's got opportunities there to break Cortez Acosta down from the legs, you know, from the bottom upwards, and take his, you know, take his base away. But ultimately, I think that, look, you can never say never in regards to a fighter knocking another fighter out in the heavyweight division, this level at the UFC, 4 ounce gloves, big boys. So Cortez Acosta, he could land his own sweet shot on De Lima and knock him out, but I think Cortez Acosta's best chance to win here is by, you know, landing volume, outpointing De Lima, tiring De Lima out late in the fight and coming on stronger late. But I think to do that, Cortez Acosta, well, to hit Marcos Ojeiro de Lima, he's got to get into range. And I think once he's into range early in this fight, de Lima's going to be landing on him. Cortez Acosta can slow down himself. So even if de Lima slows down, Cortez Acosta could be slowing down. Once Cortez Acosta slows down, his hands come down a little bit, that's going to give opportunities for de Lima to land a big bomb on the chin. He can be a little bit hittable, Cortez Acosta, at least what we've seen. The only thing with Cortez Acosta is he is young enough and green enough and new enough in his UFC career to be able to be making big developments from fight to fight. So maybe we see, you know, a different and much more improved Cortez Acosta. But, you know, from a sake of this prediction in this specific fight, based on what I've seen in tape, I'm going to have to be siding with De Lima here. So I'm picking Marcos Ojeiro de Lima to win this fight. And staying with the big boys in the heavyweight division, this time these are big 265 pounders, not the lighter heavyweights that we've just spoken about with Waldo Cortez Acosta and Ojeiro de Lima. We've got Martin Budai versus Jake Collier. And I think this is going to be one of these fights that is just going to be really fun to watch. I think Jake Collier is going to have a speed advantage. I think he's going to have a movement advantage. I think that he's going to have a volume advantage as well. So early in this fight, I think Budai has definitely got his work cut out for him. I think he's going to have a tough time early on. And I think that he's just going to have to keep up with Collier. If he lets Collier start running away with this fight, Collier will be able to start managing the range, managing the pace of the fight, and therefore managing his energy levels and his gas tank. And that'll make Collier just become a better fighter further down the line in regards to, well, I say further down the line, I just mean throughout the round. So yeah, I think that one issue with Budai can be that volume. So he's got to make sure he keeps up with Collier early in this fight to make sure Collier doesn't start protecting the energy levels and the gas tank to become, you know, fluent throughout the entire fight. And I think that Budai is going to be able to do that with power. So I think Budai, like I said, he's going to have the power advantage, although Collier's got some of the physical traits, some of the physical advantages. I think Budai, his power within his hands and everything that he throws, is going to be able to shut Jake down a little bit. I think when Jake's starting to get his volume going and speed and movement, for Jake Collier to land on Budai, he's got to come into Budai's range. You know, there's no other way to do it. And I think when he comes into Budai's range, even if Collier starts landing two or three punch combinations, I think Budai will land a hard shot just to get the respect of Jake Collier and just make sure, you know, Collier is very hesitant in regards to coming into range and thinks about what he's doing and can't just slide in and out to range as and when he pleases. And if he does, then Collier's going to know he's get hits with a harder shot. And I think if Budai can get that respect early on, I think the longer this fight goes, I think Collier can slow down a little bit. I think in those moments where Collier's slowed down, I think Budai can potentially start changing his approach a little bit, get into the clinch positions, push Jake Collier against the cage, dirty box, land short elbows, and just ultimately start controlling the fight in the clinch with Collier's back against the cage, and again just hitting him with shots just enough for the referee not to separate them back out into space. And I actually think that the longer the fight goes on, the more Budai might come into this fight. I do think Budai's a good fighter. Jake Collier just really needs those early rounds to manage the gas tank and the energy levels to really take him throughout this round. And when I say that, I'm talking obviously about that first round and then you know, trying to come on better later in this fight. But I think Martin Budai, like I said, the power is a little bit of an equalizer. I think he can, I'm not necessarily saying he's going to go in there and knock Jake Collier out, but just get the respect of Jake Collier, stop Collier coming into range as and when he wants. And when he does come into range, you know, halt that forward pressure, halt that movement, get the respect, make him hesitant. And then Budai can then take over later in this fight. And ultimately, I think that's the way that the fight is going to play out. So for those reasons, I'm picking Martin Budai to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Natan Levy versus Pete Rodriguez. And I think this is a difficult fight for Pete Rodriguez, although he does have a path to victory. Like, Pete Rodriguez, I think, has got good power. He's got good volume. He comes out the traps really fast. And I think the path to victory for him is to get Levy out of there early. Levy can be got at on the feet. He can be hit. He can be hurt. He can be drained a little bit of his gas tank when you're putting a lot of pressure on him, especially early in the fight, early in round one, which Pete Rodriguez will do. It's just with the type of fighter that Pete Rodriguez is, not only is that path to victory got to be a finish, which is always difficult inside the UFC, but that finish has to be early in the fight, which means that the finish is a small window of opportunity. And it's already difficult, like I've said, to score finishes against UFC level competition, which obviously Natan Levy absolutely is. And Natan Levy has got big advantages in the wrestling and grappling. So if Pete Rodriguez does overexert himself, which he might need to do to force that finish early in the fight, then Natan Levy could potentially just duck under, level change, and take Rodriguez down. I think from that first takedown, I think it's going to suck everything out of Rodriguez. Natan Levy will have some good top control time, and if he doesn't get that finish after the first takedown, the takedowns will just keep coming, and the more they come, the more Rodriguez is going to struggle to A, defend them, and B, stand back up to his feet as well. And let's not forget, look, Natan Levy's not, you know, a scrub on the feet. He's got a karate background, I believe. He's got good striking himself. He's got decent power. It's just, if you ask me, where can Natan Levy be got at from a defensive perspective, it's within the striking. You know, we've seen it before when fighters really put it on Levy, he can be got at, but that doesn't make him a bad striker. He's still got a good offensive game. And like I said, he's more well-rounded if he level changes into a takedown or even just clinches up against Pete Rodriguez and just drains that energy out of him early in that first round. It's really tough to pick a fighter that's path to victory is a finish, but not only a finish, an early finish with the small window of opportunity against a UFC level opponent who is an opponent who's more skilled than that fighter as well. It's difficult to side with that fighter, so for those reasons, I'm picking Natan Levy to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got a real interesting one here as well. We've got Cody Durden versus Charles Johnson. A little bit like what I said with Michal Oleksychuk early on in this breakdown, in that co-main event breakdown, I actually went into tape really liking the plus money on Cody Durden. It was around plus 170 when I taped it. It's now down at around plus 150. So there has been money coming in on Durden. And I do get it at that plus 170 number. But I wasn't as convinced coming out of tape as what I was going into tape with Cody Durden. I like Cody Durden as a fighter. I think he's a really skilled fighter. He'll bring it. He's all action inside the cage. And actually, so is Charles Johnson. And I think it's going to be a really fun fight. Now, do I think that the betting lines should be a little bit closer? Absolutely. I don't think that Durden should have been out at plus 170. Plus 150 is heading in the right direction. But I do think that Cody Durden is a rightful underdog in this fight. And again, I think stylistically, Durden could run into some problems with Charles Johnson, some real problems that's evident to me on tape at least. So although it appears that Cody Durden does seemingly fight best within the wrestling and grappling, like he is a good wrestler, he is a good grappler, that's normally where his path to victory lies in his fights. And I think naturally he'll always go into fights with that being his specific game plan. Whether he does in this fight, I'm not sure, because Charles Johnson does have good takedown defense, and not only has he got a good defensive wrestling game, he also has a good defensive grappling game. So he's got a good get-up game. He can get back up to his feet once he's taken down. It's very rare that Charles Johnson gets taken down and gets kept down on his back, can't really do anything. And I'm sure, you know, the better level of competition he fights in the UFC, the more likely he is likely to run into a fighter that does have that good topside grappling game. And Durden does have a good topside grappling game as well, but I just don't think it's at the level that's going to keep Charles Johnson down. Now, like I said, Cody Durden's a well-rounded fighter. He's a good striker as well. He's got good hands. And I'm now thinking, well, the path to victory for Durden here is probably just to keep this on the feet with Johnson and try and get into some wild exchanges, trying to land some good punches, some good combinations on Johnson. But I just don't think that Durden's going to do that. I think Durden's going to come in here and want to try and take Charles Johnson down, prove a point that he can get him down and keep him down. And I just don't think it's going to play out like that. And actually, that's the area where Cody Durden really tires. We've seen it before when he's searching for takedowns, getting into entries, looking to take his opponent down, and either the making him work so hard for the takedown or the getting taken down and working straight back up to the feet and making Durden hit another takedown. That's where he starts tiring out. And I think although Charles Johnson does slow down as well, I think Charles Johnson will be able to keep his energy levels way higher in that type of fight. So, like I say, I actually think this is a close fight if Cody Durden goes in there and starts trying to strike with Charles Johnson and just forgets about the wrestling, because I think it's going to be difficult for him in this fight, but I just don't think he's going to forget about the wrestling. And even in a 15-minute kickboxing fight, Charles Johnson's a big fighter for the division. He's a good striker himself. He's got good power. He's got good pressure. He'll get into the face of his opponent. So just like I said, stylistically, I think it favours Johnson, because from a striking perspective, the fight's close, but I slightly favour Johnson. But I think Durden's going to try and wrestle, especially if Johnson lands a couple of hard shots on Durden early in this fight and gets his respect. I think the wrestling will start, and that's where I think Durden will start to just fall away a little bit in this fight. So for those reasons, I'm picking Charles Johnson to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Josh Quinlan versus the newcomer, Trey Waters. Now, this fight only got made a couple of days ago. Josh Quinlan was supposed to fight Angelosa, which I'm a bit frustrated about. I was going to bet Josh Quinlan. He was an underdog in that fight against Loza. I'd had the breakdown written up and ready to go and just watching the betting line, really. And obviously, Angelosa pulls out. So, yeah, a little bit disappointed. And actually, I think Quinlan's got a harder fight here against Trey Waters as well. And that's nothing against Angelosa. I just think stylistically, Quinlan matched really well with Angelosa. And also, Angelosa wasn't, you know, a 6'5" fighter with a huge reach and leg reach, which is exactly where we're at with Trey Waters. He's a big dude for the division. And just that alone presents so many problems for an opponent. The thing is with Waters, though, he's very hands down. He's very chin in the air. He'll try and over-rely on moving the head when, you know, having punches thrown at him, which again is a little bit ill-advised, or it's a lot ill-advised. He'll walk backwards in straight lines. Again, that chin up in the air and the hands down. It's that tall man defense that we speak about. And I do think that, listen, Quinlan's got his work cut out here, because when Waters fires back hard as well, straight punches. Like I said, the punches come from the hip, so although that's bad defensively, the advantage from an offensive perspective is it's more difficult to see where these punches are coming from and what punch is coming from, because a fighter's having to focus lower down on the hips opposed to looking at the face of his opponents and seeing where the strikes are being set up at. So it's just a little bit more out of sight when the punches are fired from the hips. And we've seen Waters look at the knockout last time out. It was a short straight punch in an exchange, and he absolutely floored his opponent. So, look, Waters has got some advantages with the way he fights, especially with his size and his height, but, you know, there's a lot of disadvantages that come with that. Now, in regards to Quinlan, I actually think Quinlan has got multiple paths to victory here. It's just one of them I don't think he'll use. And one of the paths to victory is with the grappling, But the reason I don't think that'll play out is because he doesn't seem to like going to his wrestling. He'll prefer to stand and strike. And when his opponents engage in the wrestling, then he can hit sweeps and reversals. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's got a really good ground game, an underrated ground game. So that's one path to victory that I don't think we'll see, but a path to victory nonetheless. Then we're looking on the feet. I think that, look, Waters is hittable. His chin does hang up in the air. I think that Quinlan's got a really good lead check left hook. And I think that even if it's Waters coming into range, or if Quinlan just throws a right hand, backs Waters up, as he backs him up, step in with a left hook onto the chin and potentially knock him out. Just before Waters, Stone Cold knocked his last opponent out. He was almost knocked out himself just because he gets hit a little bit too much. So I think it's an interesting fight. I think it's definitely a harder fighter for Quinlan because of the physical traits that Waters possesses, with the height, the reach, the leg reach. But I do think Quinlan's going to be able to get at Waters. And also, the last thing to mention, with Waters being so tall, the legs are long, I think Quinlan's low calf kicks, they're not only hard, solid and powerful, but he's consistent with them throughout a fight, which is always good to see as well. So he's going to be able to break Trey Waters from the ground up as well. And ultimately, like I say, Trey Waters is going to have his moments, but I think Quinlan's going to be able to break him a little bit in multiple areas. And he's got the multiple paths to victory should he choose to mix it up as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Josh Quinlan to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Stephanie Egger taking on the newcomer, Irina Alexeva. And it's an interesting fight, this. You know, when I dived into the tape with Alexeva, she seems to be a fighter that can be a little bit sloppy from a striking perspective, but likes to get in close with her opponents, clinch up. She likes to try and get the fight down to the mat with trips, with throws. And it actually reminded me a lot of Stephanie Egger. You know, that's pretty much how Egger fights. And Egger's got really good hip toss. She's got a judo background, I believe. So she does a good job of getting fights down to the mat. I think Egger's one of these fighters where she's going to beat a certain level of opponent more often than not. And then every time she gets that step up to a much more advanced an opponent, that's the fight where she's going to struggle in and then come back down and have to reset and again beat that certain level of opponent I'm talking about. And I kind of think that, although I don't think Alexeva is a bad fighter at all, I think she's probably going to win fights in the UFC. I think she's going to do a decent job in the UFC, but it's the exact type of fighter that I feel Stephanie Egger's likely to beat. And with Alexeva liking to get close to her opponents, clinch up with her opponents, she's actually doing the work of Stephanie Egger for Egger. Like, Egger's normally the fighter that is having to work into range, get a hold of her opponents, and then get her opponents down from there. And her opponents are trying to keep distance, use movement and range. I think Alexeva's style plays directly into the style of Egger. Like I said, they're very similar fighters. I just think that Egger's going to be better once the fight closes the distance, once they clinch up, once they're together. I think Egger's going to be able to, you know, make the adjustments, get the takedowns, get on top of Alexeva. I don't see Alexeva taking Egger down. If she does, I don't think she's going to be able to do it consistently enough. I think Egger's jiu-jitsu's good enough to be able to get back up should she get taken down, whereas Alexeva, she might get up a couple of times as well, but I think the more Egger takes her down, the more the fights close the distance, the more Egger takes her down, I think the harder it is going to be for Alexeva. And I think Egger, like I say, could potentially end up finding a submission as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Stephanie Egger to win this fight. And in the next fight, this is a difficult fight to call. We've got Brian Kelleher versus Jurny Newsom. And like I say, it is difficult because I kind of feel like Kelleher has started to wrestle more than we've ever seen him before. And maybe he's now in that mindset of, look, he's getting up there in age a little bit in regards to how old he is for the division. I believe he's 36. And rather than trying to put exciting fights on and really risking, you know, getting knocked out and start to decline from a durability perspective, he's starting to fight much smarter and just thinking, look, I'm going to get in the cage and get my show money, and then I'm just going to grind a decision out and just take my win money. I think he's at that stage in his career where he's just wanting to collect as many of these win bonuses that he can. Potentially a performance bonus if one does materialise, but, you know, just fight the way he needs to fight just to get the wins, just to get the extra money on the payday. And, yeah, look, if he goes out there and does that against Jurny Newsom, I think he can get takedowns. Does he hold him down? I'm not too sure. Look, Jurny Newsom's the type of fighter where he's relatively well-rounded pretty much everywhere. He's a decent striker with decent pace. He's got good technique. you know, in regards to his wrestling and grappling, his wrestling defensively is probably his weakest point, which is where Kelleher might have success here. But Jurnee Newsom's grappling's okay. And again, I'm not solely convinced that if Kelleher takes him down, he's just going to be able to hold him down throughout the entire round and then do the same the next round. Jurnee Newsom's going to be competitive here. And I think on the feet, Jurnee Newsom can get Kelleher. We saw Kelleher be got at, for example, the likes of Hunter Azure is a very good fight. You know, Azure was landing on Kelleher, he was piecing him up. Azure wasn't really known as this striker either, he was more of a wrestler. So I think Jurnee Newsom can get at Brian Kelleher from a striking perspective. It's just when this fight starts getting mixed up with wrestling, that's more likely to be Kelleher's side. That makes the pick here really difficult because it's how Jurnee Newsom works with that wrestling and, you know, standing back up consistently. If he does stand back up a couple of times in one round, will Brian Kelleher just sack the wrestling off and carry on striking? And that's where Jurnee Newsom might start to come into the fight a little bit more. So ultimately, yeah, it's going to be close. It's a really tough pick and prediction. In these types of fights, more often than not, I do side with the underdog. Again, similar to what I said with Julian Arosa earlier on, you know, from a trust perspective, I kind of don't like to trust Kelleher, especially where he is right now. So for those reasons, I am going to be siding with the underdog and picking Jurnee Newsom to win this fight. And finally, we get to yet another Hayley Cowan breakdown. We've got Hayley Cowan still yet to make a UFC debut versus the newcomer as well, Jamie Lynn Horth. It really does feel like I've broken like 10 Hayley Cowan fights down in the last couple of months. I think genuinely she's had like 3 fight cancellations in the last couple of months. So hopefully she does get to make that first walk this time out this week, because that must be frustrating for Cowan. And actually it kind of plays into a little bit of my prediction as well, because this is technically, well, not technically a third camp, but look, Hayley Cowan's had to do a camp, cut some weight, then had a fight cancellation. Then she might have dipped out of camp for a week or two, but then got another fight straight away and gone straight back into camp. Or maybe she never got out of camp and has just continued the camp, which again, I'm not sure which is worse when you're thinking about the two, either hopping in and out of a camp or having an extra long camp. But then that happened a second time, and again, another fight cancellation. So again, she's either dipped out of camp a second time and then jumped back in, you know, a week or so later, or continued that camp for even longer. It must be really frustrating for Hayley Cowan. Jamie Lynn Horth coming into this fight. Again, Jamie Lynn Horth, she's a fighter. And listen, both of these fighters are quite similar. Like, the striking is definitely their area where they both could develop, in my opinion. Jamie Lynn Horth just loves to be on top of her opponents. You know, she'll get takedowns, she'll lay on top. Her grappling, I wouldn't say is like a BJJ ace type of grappler, but she's very positionally aware. And once she gets into a position that she's comfortable in, that she feels that she's got good control in, she'll just stay there. And if she needs to get another takedown later in the fight, she'll get a takedown, she'll get into that same position again where she's comfortable. She's very, from a grappling IQ perspective, she's very there. The thing is with Hayley Cowan is, Hayley Cowan is a former gymnast. She's very strong. She's got good balance. And, you know, that's said in commentary as well when you watch tape. And for Jamie Lynn Horth to get takedowns on Cowan, I think she's going to have to work really hard, which is the reason, in my opinion, why this fight is pretty much a pick'em. Because you've got Jamie Lynn Horth, who's got, in my opinion, an advantage. Once she gets on top with Cowan underneath her, I think that Jamie Lynn Horth is going to look the much better fighter. I think Cowan might get a little bit stuck under Horth, with Horth able to start racking up some top control time. But the thing is, you've got to take Hayley Cowan down. I kind of feel like Hayley Cowan might be the slightly better striker as well, and she's going to have potentially a strength advantage. And like I said, she's got good balance and she is difficult to get down. But I do think that Horth is going to get her down in this fight. I don't think it's going to be a 15-minute kickboxing fight. Listen, Hayley Cowan might even shoot a takedown herself, I'm not sure. But I think the takedowns are more likely to come from Horth. I think Cowan's probably going to be the slightly better striker, and I think she's going to make Horth work for the takedowns. But like I said, I do think Horth's going to be able to get her down in at least a couple of rounds in this fight. And when she does get her down, I think she's going to do good work. So for those reasons, I'm picking Jamie Lynn Horth to win this fight. And that's it for this episode of the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this fight night, actually. I think it's a low-key, good fight night. It's going to have a ton of good fights on it. I really love that main event. That's why I spent so long on the breakdown with it as well. So, yeah, really looking forward to this Saturday. If you're betting, then I hope you smash the bookies. If you are listening and tuning in on YouTube, you want to leave a comment. Tell me who you're betting. Tell me who your predictions are. If we differ, tell me and tell me why you disagree with my picks. I do always try and make time to get back to the comments. So once I do get back to the comments, it is me that's commenting. So I hope to have a chat with some of you guys. Again, if you're tuning in and you've not subscribed and you've not liked the video on YouTube, please subscribe and please like. It really does mean a lot. You know, if I've ever helped you win a bet, cash, money, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. If I help you and if you like the predictions, then please just, the only thing I ask in return is you just subscribe to the channel. So I really appreciate it. Until next week, I'm Newsome. Thanks for listening.